You're listening to the Moms Working Overtime podcast, the community of women you've been searching to find for so long. We bring together our mamas in waiting, brand new moms, stay-at-home moms, working moms, and the moms who maybe just have a little bit more experience than the rest of us. We're all here for community, support, and finding ways to show up better for our families each and every day. I'm so grateful that you're here, and I hope you love what you find on today's episode. What's up, Moms Working Overtime community? I hope you're having an amazing day when you start listening to this episode, and you're going to love what you hear today. But before we get started, I wanted to share one of my absolute favorite products that we've partnered with here on the Moms Working Overtime podcast. You've heard me talk about it over and over and over again, and it's Earthly Wellness, okay? You know, I am always seeking out for myself and my family, including my little ones, more natural ways to support their overall health and wellness. And as we finish out cold and flu season, something that I'm doing with both myself, my husband, and my little toddler is taking elderberry every single day. I love Earthly's elderberry elixir. My child runs up to me, sticks out his tongue. It's the cutest thing ever. And we do our elderberry together every single morning. But it is helping us to make sure that we are not going through this endless cycle of sickness after sickness after sickness. And I will do anything I can to make sure that we stay healthy. Warmer weather is almost here, and then I can worry a little bit less about all those nasty viruses that circle around. You know, kids pass everything around. And so if you're interested and you do decide to purchase anything from Earthly Wellness, please do me a favor and support the Moms Working Overtime podcast. I'm going to put a link down in our podcast description. It hangs out there with every single episode. And if you support us, just know that it means the world. We're constantly working to grow the Moms Working Overtime community. And this just plays a small part in us being able to do that. Thank you. And I hope you enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to the Moms Working Overtime podcast. I'm always so excited to have you all here for our Thursday interview series where I remind you that it's fun to hear from someone that's not just me. Y'all listen to my voice on the podcast all the time, but I like bringing other mamas in so that you can also hear their stories, their experiences, and learn from them. That's ultimately why we are all here, just to show up a little bit better every single day. And I'm really excited for today's interview. I have a friend that connected me with this amazing mama who's going to speak with us today and share her story. And today I have Miss Kelly Stewart here. Kelly, welcome to Moms Working Overtime.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We're super excited. I don't want to give away too much of her story, but because I know that, like many of our guests, she'll probably be super humble. This is a strong mama of five, okay? When you all talk about busy lifestyles and keeping your head above water and all the chaos of motherhood, she gets it. I can tell you, she gets it. She's also an author. She's an actress. She has some appearances on Amazon Prime that I want you to highlight, Kelly, whenever you talk about your story. And she's also a warrior, and you're going to figure out why she's a warrior after you listen to her story. You're going to have so much respect for this incredible mom. And so, Kelly, before I give too much away, I just want you to take a moment and share a little bit about you, your family, and tell your story. Mike is all yours.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. Yeah. So I am a mom of five. My husband and I live in Tampa, Florida with our children. Our oldest son is 20. He's going to be 21 soon, which is crazy.
Crazy.
I mean, I remember being 21. It's just so weird. And so he is living on his own now and working and learning to be an adult. And then our daughter is 18. She's getting ready to graduate high school and go off on all those fun adventures that you get to have at this phase of life. And then we have a 16-year-old son, and then we have 2 9-year-olds. Our daughter, Annika, is 9, and then our youngest son just turned 9. So our two youngest kids are 7 months apart, because we adopted our youngest son from China when he was 3 and a half. And so, on paper, he's 9. He does have special needs. So cognitively, he's more like 12 to 18 months. And then size-wise, he looks like a 3-year-old, but the teeny tiny little munchkin. But so that's the bulk of my day, is keeping up with those crazies. And my husband travels quite a bit, so we manage our life and we manage our schedules. And then in between, I like to fit in writing. I am a historical fiction author and have written 4 historical fiction novels and a couple of co-authored nonfiction books. And then, yeah, I've just started getting into the film world and had a starring, not a starring, a supporting role in a movie called The Author, oddly enough, a couple of years ago, that's now on Amazon Prime. And then last year filmed and helped executive produce another film called Parable that should be coming out sometime this summer. So just staying busy and staying creative and doing life.
And you know, so nonchalantly, you know, we're just juggling all the kids. My husband travels. Oh, and I have these films. I did as well. No, Kelly, you brushed right over it. And I know there are avid readers in our audience because I connect with a lot of our audience one-on-one on Instagram in all kinds of different areas that we relate on. Share the titles of your books so that they can go look at them if they're interested.
Absolutely. I love it when people find my books. So my first novel released in 2016, it's called Like a River from Its Course. And it's sort of like, you know, how you're not supposed to have a favorite child, but sometimes you do. Or, well, no, but I don't, but sometimes. Anyway, this book will always kind of have a special place in my heart. I worked on it for 10 years. I also speak Russian fluently. I lived in Kyiv, Ukraine when I was in college, and I met a bunch of World War II veterans. And so I went back to Ukraine in the early 2000s and toured the country and interviewed Ukrainian veterans. And so this first book, Like a River from Its Course, is based on the true stories of these Ukrainian World War II veterans. And then my second novel is A Silver Willow by the Shore, and it's a generational tale of 3 strong women who one survived, the grandmother survived the gulags of Stalin's Soviet Russia, and then she raised her daughter in communist Moscow, and then her daughter is raising her granddaughter in America. And so it's sort of this, like, how do these generational differences dictate how you mother and how you raise your children?
Yes, I love that.
And then my third novel is called The Fabulous Freaks of Mr. Beaumont. And it was just a really fun circus-based novel of the circus freaks and these kind of magical, amazing circus freaks. And my latest release is called The Master Craftsman. And it is a treasure hunt. It follows the life of Peter Carl Fabergé and the creation of the Imperial Fabergé Easter eggs. And it's a dual timeline. So you have the modern day timeline where a treasure hunter is searching for a missing Fabergé Easter egg. And then you're following Peter Carl Fabergé and this mystery egg that he created. So that was a really fun one to write. And that one released in 2022. So
love it. Mamas, if you are readers, go check this out. We talk all the time, Kelly, about find those 5 to 10 minutes for yourself. And reading is one of those. I think as moms, we lose sight of those hobbies or those little moments of peace for ourselves. And it doesn't take much, mama. If you are finding your 5 to 10 minutes of reading, go check out her books. I know that you're going to be able to find something that you enjoy because that's kind of a variety. Your yeah. books are each a little bit different, which is nice. So I want to start the podcast by diving more into the story of your adoption journey with your youngest son. If you could just talk more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, my husband and I, we had children pretty quickly after we got married. I mean, I had my first 3 kids before I turned 30. And I always wanted to adopt because I had studied the Russian language. I just always thought we would adopt from Russia. Mm-hmm. After our third was born, I was kind of like, okay, if we're going to adopt, like, let's think about it soon. And my husband was a little slower to get on board with the idea, but in 2012, we started the process to adopt from Russia, and we had our dossier in country. We were waiting to be matched with a little girl. We were praying for a little girl named Annika. I just really, like, I had this name, Annika, in my head, and I figured that we were going to get a little girl named Anna, and we would call her Annika, and I was already praying for her. And then in the end of 2012, early 2013, Vladimir Putin passed a law banning Americans from adopting Russian children. And I was devastated because really, like, since I was 15, I wanted to adopt from Russia. Mm-hmm. So I felt so devastated. And 2013 was really just kind of a year of healing for me. I was just, we lost a lot of money. Like, it just, and I felt like the adoption dream was just cut off. Mm-hmm. And in the end of 2013, I started to feel sick and surprise, I was pregnant. And in my husband's family, our daughter, our oldest daughter, Katya, she was the first girl in five generations.
They Oh my gosh, Kelly.
The Stuart men make boys. And so I figured we had already kind of won the girl lottery. And so I was planning on another boy, but we found out that this surprise fourth pregnancy was a girl. So we named her Annika because she was the one that we had been praying for.
Yes. God, chills.
And so she is so sweet and such a gift. And so, but again, like I always had four kids in my mind. So I just thought, well, adoption is not on the table for us. And then I don't know, like early 2017, my husband and I started talking about it again. And so we started looking into domestic adoption. And but we didn't want an infant. Like we wanted a child that needed a home. But we also didn't want to go through the foster care system. We just didn't feel like equipped for that road, weren't prepared emotionally for that. And one day out of the blue, I got this email, probably from some email list I had signed up for forever ago, right? But it was about this little boy in China named that the orphanage had named Sawyer. And if our oldest daughter had been a boy, we were going to name her Sawyer. And so I clicked on the email just because of the name Sawyer. I was like, oh my gosh, I love that name. And it was like this perfect, beautiful little China baby doll boy. And so I emailed it to my husband and I thought for sure he would be like, no way. And he was like, well, why don't we just submit an application and see what happens? And it was like the smoothest process. 10 months later, we were in China picking him up.
Oh my goodness.
China was not forthcoming with us about his issues. So based on his file, we knew he was very small. They made it seem like he had hip dysplasia, but they used terminology like he's very smart, he's very manipulative. So we thought we were just dealing with, we knew he'd had a cleft palate. They told us it had been repaired. Anyway, when we got to China, we were handed a 3.5 month old who was only 19 months or 19 pounds and clearly had significant issues that we just had not been prepared for. So those 2 weeks in China were very difficult because it was like this extreme life pivot. We just weren't prepared. But what do you do at that point, you know? And I just kept saying, you know, any one of our biological kids could have been born with special needs, and you just move on. You figure it out. And so we got him home. His cleft palate, they had attempted to repair it, but because he was so sick and so malnourished, it hadn't taken. So we had to have his cleft palate repaired. And he's just got a whole host of issues. He's a little bit of an enigma. They can't quite figure out everything. It's like a fine line between what's physiological and what is just a result of neglect and so, you know, it's every day learning to pick up the pieces of a life that looks a little bit different than we thought it would. And I know that all parents and all moms with children with special needs understand that. I mean, we adore this kid. I would, you know, I would move the moon for him, but it's hard. It's really
it's
hard.
It's hard.
It's a lot of work. He doesn't sleep well. He doesn't grow. You know, we've seen every specialist known to man trying to figure out how to best help him. He doesn't speak. He's nonverbal. He has been diagnosed with autism and, but he's wonderful and he's a part of our family and he was supposed to be a part of our family. And so every day as a mom, you get up and you do it again.
Even you when do the things.
That's what we do, right? We just get up.
Exactly. But I think moms have a hard time, especially Kelly, when you have a child who has special needs, I think moms have a hard time saying, hey, but this is hard. That doesn't mean you're any less grateful or that you love your child any less. But I think we all could be real with each other and say, this is really super hard, especially given the situation where you weren't expecting it.
Yes, it's very hard. And I even recently told my therapist, or my son's therapist, you know, because she was kind of asking, like, what are your goals for him? What should we work on with him? And it was the first time I had said this thing out loud. And it was kind of cathartic. But I just told her, you know, when we first brought him home from China, I was like, you know, I hit the ground running. I was like, we are going to figure this out and this kid's going to be healed and he's going to, and slowly over time, I have come to accept the fact that you know, he is going to have lifelong limitations. He will most likely, well, he will need full-time care his entire life. And so I told her, at this point, I don't have expectations of him. I don't, right or wrong, I don't expect him to ever speak. I don't expect him to ever be toilet trained. And I don't know if that's the right thing, but I lived under this weight of desire and hope for so long that started to feel like it was suffocating me. And I had to let it go and just accept him for who he is now. And so I'm relying on his teachers and you, his therapists, to have the expectations for him, because I don't know what's realistic and I can't live under false hope. And I appreciated that. She was like, great, we'll set expectations for him. And I said, anything that he accomplishes, any small little milestone is, I can rejoice in it, because for me, I've just like, I have low expectations and I don't know right or wrong, but it's definitely given me freedom and kind of a peace about it.
Absolutely.
All.
Kelly, my first career, the career I left to do what I do now, was occupational therapy.
Okay.
And so I feel in my heart, that hits me right in my heart. I'm like, yes, every little thing is a huge celebration, especially, you know, in his scenario, you have to celebrate every single little milestone, whether it's eye contact or, you know, any type of engagement, movement of the hands, all those things are big things. And so I can definitely relate to that. But I know that in those situations, you brought up hope and, you know, met or unmet expectations. So as you were going through that, especially those first few years of having him, what were things that helped you stay in that positive mindset? Did you have mantras? Did you have things you did throughout the day just to keep your sanity, to, you know, keep yourself in a positive space? What were those things for you?
Yeah. You know, years ago, actually it was in early 2012, right before we started our adoption from Russia. I went with, I don't know if you've heard of the organization Compassion International. They work with impoverished kids around the world. And I traveled with them as one of their like blogging writing team in 2012 to Tanzania. And we just kind of went around some different Compassion International sites where they served underprivileged kids. And one day we went to a home and it was just abject poverty. It was the first time that I had really seen just like really heart-wrenching poverty. And the guy that was leading the trip, he and I were walking back later. And I was like, because he led a lot of these trips, I said, how do you do this all the time? How do you see this heartache and keep going? It feels like too much. And he said, what has become my life mantra? He said, you know, hope is slow. Hope is, it's one little step at a time. Those kids, when they get sponsors, they have this slow hope that they can change their future. And that's hope for their parents. And so hope is slow has kind of become the mantra of my life, of hope for my son is slow. It's him pointing and signing more, please. It's, you know, hope even for my neurotypical kids is slow. They make decisions that sometimes I question, and especially as they get older and, you know, parenting adult kids, it's like, I have hope that they will find their own path, but hope is slow. And even for myself, I've had my own health challenges in the past year and a half, and hope is slow. And so that's sort of the mantra of like, every day is ripe with hope, but hope doesn't mean big things happen. It's the little things that accumulate over time that build a life.
Kelly, there's someone in the audience listening to this episode right now who's going to hear that and is going to cling to that. I really think that we forget just how impactful that little message can be, that little thing you hear when you're in the trenches. And so I know there's a mom that's going to, at least one, and that's all that matters. At least one's going to walk away. And I think that's really powerful. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I know a lot of what we talk about today is big challenges that you've been through. And I do want to talk next about that cancer diagnosis and just how you found out and how you went through that. And really just looking in the rearview mirror now, what it looks like from a new perspective. But I do appreciate you sharing all of this, because I know it's probably parts of your life that you want to move on to sunnier days and focus on what's ahead, but it helps the moms that are listening today. So can we hear more about the other side of your life where you needed that slow hope in your cancer diagnosis?
Yeah. So, You know, it was just really, really hard when we brought Sawyer home. As soon as we brought him home, our oldest son got mono and he was so sick. We were in and out of the hospital and he was sick for months. And then the day that we took Sawyer to get his cleft palate repaired, I was diagnosed with mono and I had to be quarantined, and the mono turned to abscesses in my throat. And it was just hard. And I think during all of that time, and again, Sawyer didn't sleep. I tell people, like, I actually have zero memory of the first year that he was home. I don't remember how we slept. Husband has told me, but it's not there. I don't remember.
Yep.
It was just survival. We were sleeping about 2 hours a night, and it was just massive, massive stress. It was stress on our marriage. It was stress for our other children. And
that's
during,
probably 2 hours of broken sleep too. That's not 2 hours strung together.
Only way that he would sleep is if we were standing up, rocking him. So hours and hours and hours we would stand and just rock back.
Kelly.
And so during that time, it was high stress. I think that there was a lot of inflammation in my body. And as a mom, and you know, I know moms will understand this, we tend to just grit our teeth and go through it, right? And we don't stop because there, and to me, there was no time to stop. There was no, you know, at the time I had a 14, 12, 9, 4, and 3 year old, and there was no time to stop. But I think it just, everything got out of whack in my body. And so, in August of 2022, I went in for a routine mammogram and, they found a lump and they found a second lump under my arm. And so I was diagnosed with stage 2B breast cancer. And that just kicked off a whole like 18 months of, you know, double mastectomy and then 4 rounds of chemo and then another surgery, a reconstruction surgery. And it was just, it was a lot. It was a lot. And it was really hard. And it was one of those things where I just felt like, seriously, like, cannot break. But that time forced me to slow down. After every chemo treatment, I would go to my parents' house for about 5 days to recuperate and recover. And, you know, my husband just, he was so great at taking care of me and taking care of the kids. And my parents were great. And I was forced to stop and slow down. And I don't think I had done that since we brought Sawyer home from China. And that's where I really felt like the Lord was telling me, you have to calm down. You have to slow down. And I had to lower the inflammation, the stress, the chronic stress in my body. And so I just got really serious about eating right and sleeping and supplementation and taking care of my body and exercise. And I'd always been like a fairly healthy person, but again, I had not, the one thing I had not managed well was stress. And so this past year and a half has just been about healing emotionally from that, and even healing just from the trauma of the adoption, and, you know, finally got some therapy, which I think, you know, is important.
Everyone should do.
Yes, especially if you are a caretaker of a child with needs, so you just have to have someone to talk to. And again, I had always been just kind of a grit my teeth, dig my heels in and get her done type person. But life has a way of bringing you to a halt if you won't. So, and that's, you know, I mean, again, like that hope is slow. It was scary. It's still scary. I mean, I'm in the clear now. I'm in remission. I had a good clean PET scan a couple weeks ago, so I'm really grateful.
Yay.
For that. Yeah. But, you know, it's just always like hanging over my head of this could come back. And, so I don't know, I'm in this sort of like carpe diem part mode of life, you know, like, let's just live and enjoy like rest. And I say that like rest, but I still have a child that doesn't sleep well. And yeah. So, I've had to learn to build rest into my days. So a lot of days I will just go and I will shut my door and I'll set an alarm for 20 minutes and I'll close my eyes. And I don't usually fall asleep, but I just rest for 20 minutes and I make myself just lay down and take a breath and rest for 20 minutes. And, so it's just little things like moms, we have to learn to build that rest into our days.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you next, is just what does that look like now? Because you know where the past led you by just running yourself into the ground. But I often find that moms view self-care and rest as this big thing that's really separate from our kids and, fills our cup all the way up, when in reality, it's these little things that you build into your day, 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there, like you said, closing your eyes for 20 minutes. So outside of that, are there any things that you build in that are just for you or that help you show up better for your family?
Yes, well, I think I told you before we started the interview, but I am today on a boat. I have the benefit. My parents have a boat over in Clearwater Beach, and so I have started about twice a month. Just once I drop the little ones off at school, I come to the boat and I work. And for me, like writing and creating is rest. And so making time for that. And my husband's been always really, really good at making sure that he allows me to make time for that as well. And then just not taking everything so seriously. Again, like sort of letting go of this like expectation of how my life is supposed to look and just being grateful for what my life is today. And if I can wake up and be grateful, Sawyer did not sleep well last night. Okay, well, I'm grateful that today I have a little bit of space to recuperate from that. And hopefully tonight is a better night. But if it's not, then tomorrow we'll deal with that, So building rest in as far as like actual physical rest is a good thing. I really do prioritize exercise. I would try to exercise 4 or 5 days a week. And then just calming my mind and just reminding myself, I don't have to solve every problem. I don't have to solve all of my kids' problems. I don't have to solve my husband's problems. I can listen, I can be present, but I don't have to solve all the problems. And releasing myself from that allows me to rest too.
We put a lot of pressure on ourselves as moms. And I've joked in my Monday pep talk episodes, I've joked like we have this definition of what a good mom is, especially around the holidays. It was brought to my attention. Someone said, I feel like I have to provide a certain experience or do certain things to be a good mom around the holidays. And I'm like, whoa, 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 wait, what is a good mom? Like, how do we even know what that is? And I think that when we get caught up in those unrealistic expectations, those societal norms, the pressure that we put on ourselves, it's all because we think that we need to listen to all these definitions, all this external noise, when really it's instinctual. It's inside of us. And we talk about this a lot. You were perfectly designed for being a mom to each of your children, even Sawyer, far before you were even a mom. And this is what I remind moms of all the time, is you were designed for this. Every experience you went through before they existed designed you for this. Every experience you went through with your older children, the challenges you've overcome, designed you for this journey with Sawyer, and for your journey and the strength you would need with your cancer diagnosis. And I know you've talked on social media about instincts as well. And so I just wanted to have you share, what have you done that created a higher level of trust in your own instincts, and how does that come into play with your motherhood role now that your kids are getting older?
I think some of it for me is I have the benefit that I started parenting without social media. I mean, my oldest was born in 2003. I think I got Facebook around the time my third was born. I can't really remember, but like I didn't have that pressure because I wasn't seeing what all the other moms were doing, and so I think I was able to establish these sort of young mom patterns without that outside pressure that so many young moms like yourself now have because of social media. And I now have the benefit of age and experience where I feel like I can be a part of social media without feeling that social media pressure that so many others feel because I don't know, I've been there, done that, right? And so I don't know, I think instinctively, I remember early on with my oldest son, I remember thinking, I know what to do. Like I because I've always struggled with self-confidence. I've never been one that's been super confident in my abilities or and those things have held me back a lot. But I remember with my son this like really strong feeling of I know what to do, even when I didn't know what to do. I mean, we all went through those things. Like he went through a stint where he didn't sleep, and you're trying to figure out how do you discipline, how do you get the kids to like each other, all that stuff. But and so I remember having some confidence in that, and now I've got these older kids, and I'm able to see kind of the fruit of the work that we put in when they were young. And they are not like, I think what I struggle with probably more now, because of social media, is I see other people with kids my age, and it seems like their kids are just killing it in life. And I'm like, my kids are like stumbling their way through. But then I realize, you know what? I bet a lot of kids are stumbling their way through. Don't talk about that much, partly because I'm not going to go out there and blast my teenager story to the world. It's fair to them. But they're normal kids who are figuring things out like normal kids do, like we all did. And when I quit feeling like they need to be at a certain place because it seems like the rest of society is in that place, then I'm able to let them kind of navigate their way as well. And so I think as moms, we just have to. Like you said, you have to trust your instincts. You know your kids. I know my kids so well. I know strengths. I know their weaknesses, and their weaknesses drive me bonkers. And I wish they would listen to me, and so that they could get stronger in these areas. But they'll figure that out, just like I figured that out, just like everybody has figured that out with time and maturity and all that stuff. So that's what young moms really need to hold on to is. Your kids are gonna figure it out. If you're loving them and you are pouring into them and you're teaching them to be kind and you're teaching them to work hard, they're gonna make mistakes and they're gonna do dumb things because kids do dumb things, but they're gonna be okay. They're gonna figure it out.
It's just the slowest form of gratification, I think, in existence.
It
You
really
get to put in all this work, and then, hey, I need you to wait like 20 or 25 years and you'll figure out if you did a good job.
And they're all different, right? So like my oldest, he is figuring out life on a completely different path than his sister, who is gonna do things totally different than, and so you never quite have a handle on it because they keep you on your toes.
And your oldest daughter is about to transition into college, right? She's graduating.
Graduating, and she is my like she's gonna walk out the door, say goodbye, and never look back, kid. She's always been that way, so I have been prepared for it, but I am going to be very, very sad when she leaves. Like I am dreading her leave. Like my oldest, he was just so ready. And so we were all kind of ready to see. But her, I'm like, ooh. And she's going to Spain and she's going to do an internship in Spain for a semester before she comes back and starts college. And, I just keep telling her, you cannot stay there forever. You must come home. Don't go meet some Spanish boy and think you're going to get married and
Oh my gosh. You're going to be moving to Spain before you know it, Kelly.
buy real estate in Spain.
Yep.
But it's
You know,
also really exciting. It's so exciting to see what's going to happen next.
it is. And I know you've gone through a lot of crazy transitions that looking at them, they probably look super intimidating. Every single transition, even finding out you were pregnant with your youngest, the surprise, and then going through the adoption, going through the cancer diagnosis. I know looking in the face of all those things, whether they appear exciting or scary, it's transition and transition is hard. I don't know about you. I feel like most moms are pretty similar. We don't like change. Like, I got my groove. Please don't mess with it. We're finally feeling good about things. But how are you preparing, and how do you feel like all those experiences prepared you for this next transition of motherhood, starting to send them out into the world, the gratification of it all?
Yeah, it's bumpy. Like I said, you have this idea of what it's going to look like, and so often it doesn't, and it's best to just let go of what you think it should or will look like. But with Tia, it's funny. She's doing things so much like I did. She's very much like I was. I mean, I left home and never looked back. I studied abroad. I would just like hop a train and end up in a different city and then call my parents. And so
Terrifying.
I saying, the world's a different place than it was when I did that. So you have to be careful. So a lot of like talking about, do not go traipsing about Europe by yourself, like have a buddy. And but I don't know. I think part of me is prepared because I did what she's doing. And so it's like that is this is part of that experience that prepared me for that. And with my oldest, I mean, I'm really proud of him. Like he's had a rough few years. I mean, he had a rough like high school years with getting sick and COVID and all that stuff. Like he blew out his knee and had to have two big knee surgeries, like just a lot of things. And it's been bumpy for him. And he is figuring it out. He's figuring out how to be an adult. It's been painful and hard for him, but he's figuring it out. And I'm really proud of him. And so I think, you know, as I've watched him, I've learned that, like I said before, they figure it out. They're okay. And as long as you keep open these lines of communication and you're willing to let them talk to you and share with you and find that balance of when to offer advice and when to let them figure it out. They figure it out. And I'm really proud, and it's fun to watch.
I love it. I know it's helpful for my audience too, Kelly, because obviously in the season of motherhood that I'm in, I connect with a lot of people that interview on the podcast that are in early motherhood, you know, the newborn stage, the crazy toddler stage, and trying to navigate now having multiples. And so my audience is constantly messaging me like, hey, find some moms that got teenagers, find some moms that are, you know, a little further in, because we want to hear from both sides. It's humbling to hear from both sides. And so I know that they'll love having this episode on the podcast. It's been long awaited to have something like this that they can relate to. But I want to give you a chance before letting you go today to just give any message to the moms working overtime community, anything that you think moms need to hear that would have helped you.
Yeah. You know, I think the one thing that I would love to tell young moms is you have what it takes. You know what to do. Do not get caught up in the world of social media parenting. It's confusing. It's just too confusing. There's too many opinions on what's the right thing to do and what's the right way to do it. Trust your instincts. You know your kids. I mean, I know there were years that I thought my kids are never going to like each other, especially my oldest two. They fought and fought and fought. I mean, I just like fists thrown and blood drawn fighting. And now they're the sweetest friends. You know, I could have, if I look at like the social media stuff now and all the advice, and this is how you get kids to like each other, and this is how you discipline, and this is what you do. And it's just a lot of noise. And so my advice is, don't let yourself just get overwhelmed with all the noise online. Trust your instincts, know your kids, spend time looking them in the eye, spend time just delighting in them, because it goes by so fast. Those early years, I mean, I would go back and relive those early years all over again, as exhausting as they were, because it goes by so fast. And so just trust your instincts. You know what to do. You're equipped for this, and you're going to be fine, and your kids are going to be fine.
I love it. We all need that reminder every once in a while, especially in the day and age of social media controlling so much of our thoughts. And it's, I know we tap that app open on our phone 42 times a day. And so it's a good reminder, mama, like she said, just focus on those instincts you have, shut out the noise. And you all know that I put tons of links in the podcast description every single time, because we're moms. We don't have time to write stuff down or remember stuff later in the day. What you're going to do is come back to this podcast description. I'm going to have her Instagram handle. It is Kelly Stewart Author, K-E-L-L-I. And I will post the link for that so you can follow her. I'm also going to grab some information about your books and the films that you've been in, Kelly, and I'm going to put those in the podcast description so they can check them out, because mama, date night can be a movie on the couch, maybe with a glass of wine and some popcorn. Okay. So grab your man and let's watch a movie. But I just want to remind all of the moms who are listening today, because I hope you get this reminder in your day-to-day life, but I will always give you this reminder when you're here is, hey, you're doing a really amazing job. Keep trusting those instincts and just keep showing up. And that's exactly what your children need. We'll talk soon. If you loved this episode of Moms Working Overtime, do me a favor. Share it on social media or send it to another mom to remind her that you love her and that she's doing such an amazing job. There's nothing more incredible that we can do in this community than remind other mamas of their strength. I'm so glad you were here today, and just know that I appreciate you an overtime amount.